And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. And just before the break, we were saying we're going to be speaking with Gary Howe, Vice President, Local 1005, talking about the January 29 event, the big thing coming up on Saturday. And I think we have Gary on the line. Gary, are you here with us?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing good today. How are you?
Very good, thanks.
I guess you got a big day coming up.
Yes, we do. Like, Saturday's a big day for us. We really appreciate, we've got a lot of support from all the affiliate unions across Ontario and across Canada, and also a lot of support from the community on our People versus U.S. Steel this Saturday. It's at 1 p.m. at City Hall.
Now, I guess we're in, what, the 11th week of the lockout, if I'm right? You know, just for our listeners who might not have been following the whole time, you know, why does U.S. Steel say it locked out the workers, or perhaps why do you think it started the lockout?
Well, basically, we were locked out on November the 7th. Basically, we weren't interested in getting locked out. We didn't have a strike vote or a strike mandate by our members. And, in fact, in October of this year, it was for the second time, U.S. Steel idled the blast furnace in Hamilton and shifted production down to the States. So they idled their blast furnace and started two up in the States. So a lot of the work that, or a lot of the steel that would have been produced for Canada is now being produced in the States for Canadian customers. And we don't think that's right. And we know there's a lot of people, a lot of Canadians don't feel that that's right.
Well, the blast furnace, idling that is a serious thing. Starting that up again, if it goes completely out, is very difficult, isn't it?
Well, it's not as bad as it used to be at one time. Like, U.S. Steel has different technologies that they use that they can seem to turn them on and off at a greater rate than they would in the past. But for us, the reason it's big is because, obviously, what we were only asking for, the same thing that we had when they bought us back in November 2007. So we didn't have any additional demands, contract demands at negotiations. When we were purchased by U.S. Steel, actually, John Surma, CEO of U.S. Steel, and Gretchen Haggerty, the chief financial officers, flew up in their corporate jet and told us they'd done their due diligence and they had absolutely no problem with our pensions or our contracts. And they were such a, you know, they were such a reputable employer that, in fact, that year they had voluntarily put $400 million into their U.S. pension plans. And shortly after that, this chief financial officer wrote in the Hamilton Spectator that, you know, people at Hamilton have nothing to worry about. Their pensions are safe with U.S. Steel. So obviously, I believe by the support that we have in the community that a lot of people in Hamilton don't believe that anymore.
Well, I guess U.S. Steel had certain obligations or duties when it purchased former Stelco. One of them was maintaining a certain level of employment, and the other was maintaining the level of pensions and benefits that had already existed. So I guess the pensions and what's happening to them is a major issue or a thing that U.S. Steel perhaps wants to change?
Yeah, they had two. Basically what happened when they called in the mediator, they basically had two big demands, and one was that they didn't want to index pensioners anymore for our 9,000 pensioners that we have in Hamilton and the surrounding communities, and they did not want new employees coming in that got hired into U.S. Steel Canada Hamilton to be part of our defined benefit pension plan. They want to put them in a defined contribution like a savings plan. So what we say is that they want to attack the most vulnerable, the people, the older people, and the young people that haven't even started there. So it was kind of, you know, the one point drove at home for us. We have weekly information meetings, and one of the pensioners got up at these meetings and said, you know, like, you're going to have 900 people vote. What's going to affect 9,000 pensioners? Where's my vote? Because, you know, they felt that they've worked there their whole life, you know, given to, you know, the company and the community, and, you know, like, all of a sudden their indexing was just going to be taken away from them. And, you know, just it's important to know that a lot of the people that we have, you know, they only get, like, you know, some of the widowers and that only get, like, $300-$500 a month. And one thing that's kind of interesting that people might be interested in is our indexing really isn't like a Cadillac indexing plan. So in 1990, so like 21 years ago, the pensions, a monthly pension was $1,000 for a person that retired at that time. So now, with indexing, it's worth roughly, like they got a roughly $346 more in indexing. So they make $1,346 instead of $1,000. Now, if you think of the cost of living over the last 21 years, that's not a lot of money of an increase, but it's something. So, you know, like that's just trying to keep up with inflation.
So, I mean, that's maybe around 34-35% pension increase over 21 years, not exactly a Cadillac agreement, as you've put it. It's hard to keep up with inflation, and I guess U.S. Steel was trying to remove that indexing, so that would mean that inflation would further run away from the pensions that steel workers and the families were relying on.
Absolutely.
I see. So this is very much a situation faced by many manufacturing locals across Ontario, and we had some interviews on that subject in the last few weeks. It's a problem that's faced by Stelco pensioners, Stelco workers, other manufacturing workers, including the auto sector. I believe we ran an interview with Mike Hirsch on that subject. So two-tier locals creating two types of union members, workers within the same area, that is also a problem. Now, given that this is a change in what you expected in terms of the agreement once U.S. Steel purchased former Stelco, there's been pressure and mobilization on the government to enforce that agreement, make U.S. Steel stick to it. The federal government is suing U.S. Steel now, I think, for breaching that agreement. The steel workers were able to get involved in that. You're able to become a party in that lawsuit. And U.S. Steel tried to appeal that intervention. So can you tell us what happened in terms of that appeal?
Well, the whole process has been, long and drawn out. And basically, the last ruling was made on December 23rd. And it upheld the rights of the United Steelworkers to be an intervener, and actually Lakeside Steel, which is also an intervener, because they have said that they're interested in buying like the Stelco or the U.S. Steel Canada. So they are granted to be interveners. So it was kind of interesting because we go to all the proceedings, And you see that they're making the same arguments that they made at lower court. So basically, it's just been upheld. And we haven't really even got into basically the main arguments of the charges and that the Investment Canada Act brought upon U.S. Steel for not living up to the commitments.
Well, it's good that the union is able to be involved in that process, and it seems in your interest to continue that involvement, so I can see why it would be contested. On the one hand, this is about pensions, inflation, levels of employment, two-tier situations in the local, but when you try to fight this issue, it becomes so much bigger. So now the steel workers are involved in a federal court case along with other manufacturers, and it gets even bigger than that because I understand now steel workers that have been locked out are going to be receiving employment insurance. This is very interesting because I understand it's not typical for people that have been locked out or involved in a labor dispute, at least, to receive EI. So why do you think the members are receiving it?
Okay, so I was involved with the process of applying for EI benefits, and basically it's pretty simple on what the ruling was. So Service Canada basically did an intense search of the legislation and an in-depth fact-finding. So we submitted to Service Canada quite a bit of the details of what had happened. And basically, due to the fact that U.S. Steel shut down production in October of 2010, they didn't lay anyone off, right? And then they went into the mediation process. So basically, the plant's production had already stopped before the labor dispute started. And that's the main reason why we're getting employment insurance. And then consider the fact, like I said, they shifted production down to the states. So one of the key factors, and it's a very important for the workers, obviously, to get EI benefits because obviously it helps them financially. And today was one of the first days where most people started to receive some money. So it's a very good day around here. It's a big moral support. Because, you know, like there's a lot of people, not just us, saying what U.S. Steel is doing is wrong. It's wrong for the community and some of the things that they promised. But if I can just add this one thing, Brandon, with regards to, you know, what we did when U.S. Steel shut us down for the first time 2 years ago in November of 2008, we started to leaflet in downtown Hamilton every week, and some of the people listening might have seen us every Monday downtown at Gore Park. And the reason we do that is because we're not just fighting for our rights and our pension, but we think it's important that all Canadians deserve a decent standard of living when they're retired. So that's important to all Canadians. That's an issue that's huge for all Canadians. And so that's why I think we have a lot of support from all the other unions on this issue, because they know, right, if U.S. Steel is allowed to what I call weasel out of their commitments, then, you know, like, what's stopping other people from following on and going into the public sector and starting to attack their pensions and way of living when in retirement?
In terms of January 29, you are getting a lot of support. Can you name some of the other unions that are going to be there on Saturday?
Well, almost all the major unions are going to be there. We got the CAW is going to be there. QP is going to be there. If you go on our website and look at all the letters of support that we have, I could sit here for probably quite some time and go through them all. But basically, we have all kinds of letters of support from all the major unions. Going to be out Saturday, and then what we're going to try to do is get a big photo op at 1 o'clock of all the unions. I hate to mention single out certain unions, but the CAW was gracious enough to have us down at their last council meeting. Rolf Gertzenberger, our president, gave a presentation. They realize that their fight's our fight, and they'll be under attack, just the same as us. And then QP's been down at our picket line. They've given us $10,000. All the teachers' unions have been excellent with us. And like I said, I hate to single out different people, because all practically every union, the firefighters have been good for us, like all different kinds of organizations. And the problem is when you start to single certain people out, it's difficult. And then, you got the steel workers from different locations. We're happy that we're going to have steel workers from U.S. Steel in the States are coming up, because it's important for us to send out the message that, it's not us against U.S. Steel, U.S. workers, right? You have U.S. Workers that are supporting our cause, too. We got people coming from Quebec, to support us on Saturday. I think we got some people coming from BC. So,
it's
going to be huge on Saturday.
It's very significant. Again, I was saying that the issues are related to issues that others are facing, and that's why people can recognize, understand, and sympathize with this so easily. There's going to be dozens of buses coming out. I guess I'll mention one little reminder about that at the end in terms of people coming, showing up. The last thing I was hoping to address is, I understand you were at Ryerson or at a conference looking at strategy, what the labor movement is going to do. Did you have the opportunity to engage in any planning or suggestions as where people can move forward from here?
Well, that's a good issue. And one of the things that I talked about at Ryerson was one of the reasons that, we feel has really helped us is back when we were still Stelco and we went into bankruptcy, we started having weekly information meetings. And it's a lot of work. And that's open to our members and to retirees. And we've had different guests. And we talk about, what we're facing and what the situation is at the time. And we take the time to talk about what we should do. And there were some times that when we were especially in bankruptcy, we weren't sure what we should do. But after, we discussed it and talked it out, then we came up with a strategy. And since then, we've had these weekly information meetings where we talk about what's going on, not just at our level, but, you know, like across the country. And we feel that that's been very a useful tool for us to move forward. Now, I've been involved with the labor movement for a long time, and, you know, this is something relatively new, along with, like I've already mentioned, where we do the weekly leafleting downtown at Gore Park on Mondays. With those two things, we feel it's really helped us out. And like I said, it's a lot of hard work. You know, it takes, you know, it's not a 40-hour work week for us. And we think, you know, like there's no easy solution. So I know that, you know, a lot of people like Facebook and stuff like that, and that's an excellent tool. But there's nothing that beats the one-on-one conversations and discussions about a strategy.
Well, there's nothing that beats being physically present somewhere. And that's why it's important to come out to meet with people and organize on the issues and also to have these demonstrations. And I got to say, on this lockout issue, on the pensions, you've been fighting every step of the way. Local 1005 has been holding out, setting an example for the city. I don't think Hamilton could ask for more from the steelworkers or from a union. So I want to thank you very much for that. And I want to thank you for being on our program today.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it, given the opportunity to be able to talk about Saturday's event.
Well, you've been very visible in promoting this event and in the union activities, so I was glad to have the real thing on the radio. So thanks very much, Gary.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.